Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Yesterday was the anniversary of the death of Joseph Smith while he was being held in custody at Carthage Jail in Illinois. And we thought that we would talk about his death by going through a portion of a book that was written by two Mormon historians, James B. Allen and Glenn M. Leonard. It's titled The Story of the Latter-day Saints. This is the first edition that came out in 1976. And we began reading under the heading The Martyrdom, which began on page 190. Today, we're going to begin at page 192. If you listened to yesterday's show, we were talking about how the city council, being ordered by the mayor of Nauvoo, Illinois — Nauvoo was a Mormon city, you could say. I'm sure there were non-Mormon Gentiles, as they would understand them to be, living in the same town, of course, but it was predominantly a Mormon town. Joseph Smith was the mayor. There was a newspaper that was published criticizing Joseph Smith, was exposing his polygamous acts, and also exposing the fact that they felt that he had abused his power as a leader in the city of Nauvoo. Joseph Smith has the city council destroy the printing press, scatter the type — the phrase that was used back then was pie the type — and they burned the available papers. And within hours, the order had been executed. The publishers of the paper, these authors write, feared for their personal safety and fled to Carthage, which was several miles away. Carthage becomes important because that's where Joseph Smith is eventually going to be incarcerated and eventually is going to be killed. The authors make this interesting statement, that they had not violated the constitutional guarantees of freedom of the press, though they had probably erred in violating property rights. Whether or not you want to agree with that statement, the fact is Joseph Smith and the City Council of Nauvoo was trying very hard to censor these individuals from saying anything negative about Joseph Smith. It says that Joseph Smith was the judge of a court that was held. Smith was released on June 13th following a habeas corpus hearing before the Municipal Court of Nauvoo, but they note that Joseph Smith was the judge of that same court. So you have to ask yourself, is justice really going to be rendered given the fact that people sympathetic to Joseph Smith and even Joseph Smith himself seem to have the final say in the matter?
I find it humorous to have it say that the city fathers had not violated the constitutional guarantees of freedom of the press. Well, wait a minute, you just destroyed a printing press. In fact, what about freedom of speech that's allowed? This is the United States of America, but because they have their own people in, and Joseph Smith is the judge, he's the mayor, they can do things the way they want, doesn't make it legal.
On page 193, it says, "The brashness and swiftness of the city council's retaliatory action against the expositor and the easy release from trial of those responsible gave those plotting against the prophet's life ammunition for their scheme. Anti-Mormon newspapers called for the saints' extermination." Now, again, we can debate what did they mean by the word extermination, because it had different meanings back then. It meant to expel, and you could also say to exterminate could mean to kill. And it says, "At Warsaw," this is a town near Nauvoo, "and Carthage, citizens' committees sustained this feeling with formal resolutions."
It goes on and says, "In response, Joseph Smith mobilized his guards and the Nauvoo Legion, and on June 18th, he placed the city under martial law. At the same time, he furnished detailed information on the matter to Governor Ford and requested a thorough investigation. The citizens of Hancock County, meantime, importuned the governor to mobilize a state militia to ensure justice for the Nauvoo offenders."
But the authors go on to say, so intense was the excitement on both sides that the chief executive published an open letter urging calmness. Now, the chief executive would be Governor Ford, Governor Thomas Ford, then personally traveled to Carthage to neutralize a situation that threatened civil war.
It goes on and says, Governor Ford believed that the only way to settle the expositor charges would be a trial at Carthage, the county seat. Therefore, on June 25th, after negotiations over the legal procedures to be followed, and after receiving a guarantee of protection from Ford, the 15 men named in the riot charge voluntarily presented themselves to officials in the county seat. A justice of the peace reviewed the case and freed the defendants on bonds pending a trial at the October term of the circuit court. The Nauvoo party retired to the Hamilton House, a nearby hotel, but later that evening, Joseph and Hiram were jailed under an improperly issued writ granted by Robert F. Smith, a justice of the peace and captain of the Carthage Greys. The writ was issued in response to a warrant charging the Smiths with treason for declaring martial law. It was enforced without a hearing.
So now you can see the charges are being anteed up a little bit. Now we're getting to something very serious. Riot, oh yeah, certainly riot is a serious charge, but now you're talking treason. Treason's a capital offense. Back then, if you were considered guilty of treason, you were executed for that crime. So I'm sure Joseph Smith is probably himself seeing this as getting a little bit out of hand here. But as we go on in this book, it says that Joseph Smith at one point even tried to flee. But pleas from those that were members of his church and even from his wife Emma, as the authors say, urged him to submit to the law, which he did. Uncertain that justice would be fairly administered in the hands of his enemies, he expressed hints of his fears to those on the road with him to Carthage. One of them remembered his words, quote, I am going like a lamb to the slaughter, but I am calm as a summer's morning. I have a conscience void of offense toward God and toward all men. If they take my life, I shall die an innocent man. Now again, they're supposedly on the road to Carthage when this is allegedly said. I personally have my doubts. Was it really said, and was it said exactly that way? It sounds very romantic, and we know that when we look back in Mormon history, a lot of things written after the fact are certainly romanticized to make Joseph Smith look larger than life. But when he says, if they take my life, I shall die an innocent man, my argument would be innocent of what? What would he be thinking about when he makes that comment? We know he was mayor who ordered the destruction of the press. That seems to be not even debatable. We know that he was, in fact, bedding a lot of women in Nauvoo, some of whom were married to living husbands. So we know he's guilty of that. But the next paragraph says, now the death of Joseph Smith appeared certain. After his interview with the imprisoned prophet, Governor Ford, this is Thomas Ford, disbanded the state militia at Carthage except for two companies of the anti-Mormon Carthage Greys assigned to guard the jail. He took a third company with him to Nauvoo. Although warned of a plot to kill the prophet, he resisted the rumor and left for the City of the Saints on the morning of June 27th, ignoring his promise to allow the prisoners to accompany him.
Tactical mistake, Bill, because by doing that, he's going to now open up the door for enemies of Joseph Smith to be able to kill him. And I believe, and I think you do as well, that if Joseph Smith had not been killed, it was the wrong thing to do. Let's just say that straight up. If he had not been killed, then you and I would not be sitting here doing these radio shows right now. We would probably not be in this ministry because I think that Mormonism would be no more popular than Shakerism would have been with Ann Lee. That was very popular back in the days of the 1830s. I think by killing him, that was the worst thing they could have done.
Yeah, and I do think that, as you had just mentioned, that Ford made a very big tactical mistake. He should not have done that. If he had promised protection, he should have given him protection. It certainly does look as if Governor Ford was leaving Joseph Smith out there and quite vulnerable to his enemies. So I would certainly disagree with that. But this is what the authors go on to say on page 195. At Carthage, meanwhile, a body of men from the disbanded Warsaw Regiment, and again, Warsaw was a town nearby, daubed their faces with mud and gunpowder, rushed the jail, and quickly overpowered the cooperative guards who had agreed in advance to load their guns without balls. The assailants rushed upstairs to the jailer's sleeping room where the four Latter-day Saint leaders waited. John Taylor and Willard Richards were armed with stout canes. The prophet carried a six-barrel revolver and his brother a single-shot pistol. Now, this would be the revolver that was left by Cyrus Wheelock earlier. And when Cyrus Wheelock left, he was not allowed to return to the jail. But when he was in the jail the first time, he pulls out this gun and he asks if anybody wanted it. And Joseph Smith said yes, to give it to him. And he puts it in his, as it says, his pantaloon pocket. A guy by the name of Fulmer would visit and he would drop off a pistol. And Joseph Smith would give that to his brother Hiram. Hiram never used this pistol. But Joseph Smith did, in fact, use the gun that was given to him. It was an Ethan Allen pepper box, which had a revolving barrel. And as this account gives us, three of the barrels failed to discharge. Now, you might say, well, what is Joseph Smith doing here? Well, according to the account in the history of the church, Joseph Smith opens the door and sticks the gun through the door, and he fires six times, but only three of the barrels go off. And I know some Mormon apologists have tried to argue that Joseph Smith did not kill anyone, regardless of the account by John Taylor saying that he did. But think about this, folks. The fact that Joseph Smith fires into the crowd of attackers, you think he's trying to wound them? Or do you think he's trying to kill them? I would think a person sticking a gun in the face of an attacking mob is trying to bring those men down to kill them. And so whether or not he did, he tried to kill them. The fact remains, he ultimately tries to make an escape out of one of the windows in the upstairs cell. He attempts to give the Masonic signal of distress, but he's only allowed to get out the first four words, "O Lord, my God." Had he been allowed to finish it, he would have said, "O Lord, my God, is there no help for the widow's son?" He is fired upon by the mob. His body falls outside the window. They prop him up. They shoot him again. And as these historians say, of the four Latter-day Saints at Carthage Jail, only Willard Richards remained uninjured. Samuel Smith, who happened on the scene soon after the murders, helped Elder Richards arrange for removal of the bodies to the Hamilton House, where John Taylor was also carried. Elder Richards participated in the coroner's inquiry before Justice of the Peace Robert F. Smith and wrote a quick note informing the church at Nauvoo, "Joseph and Hiram are dead."
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Did you know that this year marks the 40th anniversary of Mormonism Research Ministry? All of us at MRM want to thank those of you who have faithfully supported our efforts to educate the body of Christ about the differences between Mormonism and Christianity, as well as sharing God's grace with the Mormon people. If you would like to give a special anniversary gift to further our efforts here at MRM, simply click the donate button on our homepage at mrm.org. Your support, as always, is greatly appreciated.